All right, guys, welcome in. It is Brad with College Sports Cast, and we are here tonight to do our big fuss show, week 39, season 2. It is the last day of April.
Please have your attention.
It's all a commotion around here.
What are you talking about?
Let them yap at you.
It's actually very exciting.
Hey, guys. Welcome back in. It is Brad with College Sports Cast. We are here tonight to do our big fuss show. This is week 39, season 2. We are at the very end of April. I've got Hammonds here with me. What's up, Hammonds?
What's up, man?
It has been a wild, absolutely wild few weeks. Today's been another crazy day, seems like. But, you know, there is tons of stuff to talk about, really. Of course, I'm going to dig in very first. I'm going to dig into our Facebook page. And I've been starting the show out with these. Seems like every show here lately. So, we'll talk about our growth on our Facebook page, our College Sportscast Facebook page. If you're with us on the Facebook page tonight, you can help support us by sending us stars. There is two ways you can do it. One is sending stars. That helps us earn money to help bring you guys more and more content. Also, you can now subscribe to our Facebook page. We have a subscribers page. And on that, I am posting a little bit of insider stuff. I had some really good stuff. Also, pretty good stuff on there. Had to make you laugh. So it's 99 cents a month is all it is. Doing it really cheap for you guys. But it is a little bit of insider stuff that I'm posting on there. And you can help support us by doing that as well. So, what's up, guys? Jeremy, Dave, Mama Hammonds, I see you on here. Daniel is with us as well. So, what's up, guys? I appreciate you guys being with us. Who else just come on board? Somebody said hi. Thomas Hayes said hi. What's up, Thomas? All right, so we're going to start out our show tonight with a little bit of some stuff that's different. There is some possible major, major changes coming to college sports. And the last couple of days, there has been some things that has gone on mostly under the table because there's been so many other things with the portal and stuff going on that it doesn't seem like it's getting a whole lot of traction. But I want to start the first half or so of this show out by talking about some of this stuff. And yesterday morning, I think, early, it was released that UAB's entire football team, every single player on the football team has signed to join a players association. Now, that's what they do in the NBA. It's what they do in the NFL. It's what they do in the pros. What this will do is allow these players to negotiate.
Yeah. Possibly. The thing too is it's going to reach a point where, you know, which athletes to me will have the best opportunity. He'll have the best to bargain. You know, they'll have a seat at the table to figure out, you know, what they want to do going forward. Like, it's a brand new game now. This might change the era of college football.
So Trent Dilfer had meetings with his entire football team at UAB. Of course, Trent Dilfer is a player and was in the players union for the NFL, and he is now the head coach of UAB. And he had meetings with his entire football team and explaining to them they have signed on with an organization called athletes.org. That's who they signed on with. It is a players association, and they were told in these meetings that they would have a seat at the table. They were told that they could get a share of the TV revenue. There's lots of stuff that's going into this. And having one whole team, my thing is this, John. So this is a team that's a non-Power 5 team, okay? Non-Group of 5 team, or non-Power 5 team. They're in the Group of 5, UAB is. Mm-hmm. Well, they just negotiated a much lower percentage of the college football playoff for the Group of 5 conferences. So there has been some talk that the Group of 5 might want to create their own playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But with this, seems like maybe it would give them a chance to have a seat at the table to bargain themselves and get a bigger piece of the pie. What do you think?
Well, and I think another thing, too, on top of that is with the coaches. Will the coaches be about themselves, or will they be about the players in that regard? So this is a big thing in college football now. This could be a firestorm to see to where all these Group of Five teams and conferences, they pull together and say, you know what, we're going to be employees. We're going to figure this thing out, and we're going to try to do this the right way.
If they all move together and you got 60-some-odd teams, half of the Division One teams that are saying, we've all joined this player association and we got a seat at the table, like this could be an absolute game changer.
Well, and it could help with the transfer portal. It can help with the NIL. It can help with a lot of things.
It would tie all of that in. Absolutely. Like everything that's going on
another thing on top of it, though, is if you get the Group of Five teams involved, then you can maybe just harp on over to the Power Five, and the Power Five could work some things out. But with the Power Five, it's going to be difficult, in my opinion, because it's a different kind of level compared to the Group of Five. And there's ways to
– It is, but when the Power Five, if they could all join together in a players association, it would give them a lot more power than being individual and like UAB's just saying, hey, we want more of this and we want more of that.
Well, if you say this
all together.
I do like how Trent Dilfer is going about this, though.
Yeah. I mean, you can dig into that a little bit more, but he really is trying to look out for the betterment of his players, it looks like.
He is. And I think that it's going to be a firestorm that's going to cause a lot of these other schools to kind of join in too as well to be a part of that association. And it was just a matter of time before all this took place anyways.
Yeah, you know, it's a big, big development. It seems like it's kind of under the table. Not a lot of people are talking about it. That's what I mean by under the table, not that it's shady. That's not what I mean. I just mean that not a lot of people, it's not in the news a lot. Not a lot of people are talking about it yet. But I think it's very significant that, you know, especially these Group of Five Division One teams who just got cut from their percentage of the college football playoffs. They were 22%. That's what they were getting of the revenue. They were cut to 9% in the new setup, the group of five.
And I think, too, you know, the players in the past have not really been a factor in a lot of these decisions. And they've had people over them with more power. And now they're going to be able to have, like you said, a seat at the table to basically have their input on things. And that changes the whole game plan about things. And I think that's a great thing for college football.
Yeah, and I'm not saying here, guys, that just because UAB, one team, has done this, that they're going to get a seat at the table. What I'm saying is that if a bunch of these teams join together and you start getting more of these teams doing this, then you've got a much louder voice.
Yeah.
A much louder voice. I think it's the start of something here. This is how almost all pro sports are handled. And with the money that's being thrown around in college sports these days, college sports is much more like pro sports than people really want to admit.
I tell people this all the time, and you know, with the new age and the portal and the NIL, and I joke about it and I laugh about it, but it's the truth. It won't be too long before college sports has, you know, athletics has a salary cap like the pros and such. It's going to reach that point, especially like with the free agency.
We are fixing to touch some of that, because not only is UAB and the players joined the Players Association, there were two other things that come out yesterday, and we're going to dig into those as well. And I'm telling you, this is monumental stuff here. So the NCAA is in talks to settle their antitrust case against them. And what this means is there is a huge, and I mean huge, antitrust case against the NCAA claiming that they withheld money from players, okay? There is over 7,000 players in this lawsuit, current and former, all right? And the court system has been heavily favoring the defendants against the NCAA in this stuff. The NCAA has taken so many losses along the way. There are four big cases coming up. There's one scheduled to begin on this antitrust case in January of 2025. So we are 8 months away from this big, huge case beginning, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I want to tell you. Here's what's at stake in this case. If they let this case go to court and the NCAA loses, they are liable, guys, for $4.2 billion in this case. $4.2 billion. Okay? I ask you this, John. Do you think the NCAA could survive that?
No, probably not.
$4.2 billion?
That's a lot of money to throw around.
Would that bankrupt college sports as we know it?
I don't think it would bankrupt it with how everything's happening now, but I think you would see a lot of changes to the NIL, I think you'd see a lot of changes to how they operate things, you know, especially with the salary cap. Like I know I joke and cut up about that, but it's going to reach a point to where now.
Yeah. So
we're going to reach a salary cap point in college athletics to where it's going to be ran like the NBA, NFL, and so forth, NHL, whatever. And a lot of people say, well, is that the end of college athletics? I don't think it's the end. I think the players should get paid. I think they should be employees. But there's certain ways that we have to go about it.
I think it's the beginning of actual structure.
Structure,
sports. Because for years, even before NIL now and everything, for years there's been back channel payments and under the table payments and everything else that's been going on. There's been programs that's been, you know, that's had the death penalty, that's been punished. This stuff has been going on in college sports, and people have turned a blind eye for 50 years or more.
Yeah, and people say, well, what was this structure at a couple of years ago? Well, back a couple of years ago, we didn't have all these – well, even 3-4 years ago, we didn't have all this, all these NIL transfer portal things. It was just a fluid situation to where we just had guys – transferring every once in a blue moon. But now you got all these things happening. And even back in the 80s, people can say what they want. They was getting back channels things back there, back then, that they do now.
It's been going on.
It might not have been high dollars like it is today, but it was still pretty good sums of money that they was getting thrown at them.
I mean, SMU was, the players were getting $1 million, and that was 40 years ago.
Well, I mean, you didn't hear about it as much, what I'm saying. Like, you heard maybe of a couple programs that went on the death penalty that had problems, but you didn't hear it as much as you do now.
Okay, so let's dig into these cases just a little bit, okay? So the NCAA is in talks to try to work out a settlement so they do not have to go to court and possibly be out a lump sum of $4.2 billion, okay? So from everything that I have read, and I have been doing a little bit of research so we could talk about this tonight, but there is a veteran sports labor attorney by the name of Jeffrey Kessler, okay, that is on the other side of this antitrust case from the NCAA. And he's very, very good at what he does. And by veteran, I'm going to give you a little bit of backdrop, okay? Jeffrey Kessler, the attorney that's going against the NCAA here, was one of the team of lawyers in 1993 for Reggie White. In 1993, they worked out a settlement that actually created the structure that we see today and the salary cap. The structure, payments, and the salary cap of a lawsuit that was filed by Reggie White against the NFL. This was in 1993. Okay? And Jeffrey Kessler was one of the lawyers who worked out that deal and structured the deal that has been known for 30 plus years that the NFL has operated from, with structured salaries, meaning pay rate salaries, and a salary cap for every team. And he worked this all out 30 plus years ago for the NFL, and now he's on the team that will probably get something worked out for the NCAA. That's a wild nugget of knowledge to think about.
Mm-hmm.
What that means, John, is that we may get – structure, payments for NIL, and everything out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't you think all of that would be good for what's going on in the college basketball and football and whatever else?
Yeah, I think it would.
College sports?
I think it would be real structured. You would have to where you wouldn't have all this tampering happening. You wouldn't have all this going on. It would be a straight shoot to where the information is going to. You know, before I got on here, I shared something with you. The Providence head coach, Kim English, made a comment on his Twitter feed that he called out a bunch of these coaches and assistant coaches and said, if you want to tamper with some of my players, why don't you contact me instead of contacting my players? If you want to recruit them, contact me. See, it's reached a point of it's just out of control. There's no, like you said, there's no structure. There's no, it's every man for himself. It's balls to the walls. And there's no rules. And now with this, you got rules at least set in place that can get these guys to, you know, get the money that they want and at the same time do it the right way. And I think that's what's going to be great about college sports. And hopefully it changes that with this whole ruling and whatnot.
So there is even more to this. But this is the NCAA side of it and what they are trying to do with this antitrust case and kind of just how big this could be. I think learning about Jeffrey Kessler and the work and the team he was a part of that helped structure all of the NFL is huge because – not only does he already have the knowledge of how to do this, he can help set it up. You know, I mean, this means that, you know, there could be contracts, player contracts that have to be signed that are so long that can only be up to this amount, this certain amount. Its team could have a salary cap. So, you know, so let's say football team has a $10 million salary cap for a Power 5 conference. I'm just throwing out numbers, okay? But, you know, so you can pay this player up to, you know, whatever, your freshman up to, let's call it $250,000 and your, you know, seniors up to $1 million or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know exactly what this pay scale and what this structure will look like. But from everything I'm reading, there are talks going on just like this that's going to help settle this antitrust case. Now, there's more to it than just that. So I'm going to get to that. But so what does Mike say here? Other teams
contact that coach. Scholarships are year to year. Basically, every player is a free agent. But I think what he was kind of going with, though, is guys that hadn't entered the portal yet.
Yeah, but tampering is supposed to be illegal, but it's going on, and everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so the next thing that I want to bring up is this. There are three kind of parts of this. And the next one is this. So in February, there was an announcement that the SEC and the Big Ten was doing a combined group, basically, and they were going to try to help like all the stuff that's going on in the college football world. And they had some meetings. Well, guess what? The biggest thing they're working on is the SEC and the Big Ten is developing a revenue share for players. And they're the ones that's leading this. The two most biggest, most powerful conferences in all of college sports. You got Greg Sankey and the Big Ten commissioner. He's changed a couple of times, and I can't remember the dude's name right now because they just changed in the last year, 6 months maybe. I can't remember. But the commissioner of the most powerful conferences in college sports are working on a deal with the NCAA. This is part of the package. This is part of the package that they are putting together to offer a settlement for this antitrust case. And with that said, here is what is part of that settlement. I told you guys that it would be $4.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these numbers may change, but early reports are that they are looking at settling to give each school somewhere between $15 and $20 million every year out of revenue share for the players. This is not the school gets to spend this money wherever they want to. This is money that is designed as a revenue share for the players. What that means is you're looking at the possibility of the schools paying their players. Not some company over here, not some collective, not the
the universities.
The universities themselves would get a lump sum of, say, let's call it $20 million, and they have to use that to pay their players. So instead of $4.2 billion going to, you know, over 7,000 players and all that, they are offering a NIL share, a revenue share, and the deals and all of that, all the money that's coming in to the SEC and the NCAA and all the TV deals and the TV ratings and watchings and you know, and everywhere that they bring in money, they would be getting a revenue share right now, like I said, up to $20 million per team. That's pretty big, John.
Ruby, I mean, it's – instead of, you know, maybe going through Foot Locker and all these other places and some of these big-time brand companies, you would just basically be getting it from the university and the athletics department.
And yeah.
That's a huge deal, man.
And you could control this so much more. It would be structured. You also would have a salary cap.
Well, and the thing, too, it would change how – some people would view NIL and how and where some would go and where they wouldn't go. And I think that would be a big plus for college athletics.
Yeah. And especially if there's a structured player cap, like if you are, you know, whatever, I don't know how they'll structure it, but if you're a sophomore, you can only make up to this much. If you're a junior, you can only make up to this much. You know what I mean? If there is a cap, I mean,
see, this is where I kind of got with the idea with the whole Jaden Quaintance thing. You know, I don't know the whole numbers behind what he wants. I just know what I've seen. There's been anywhere up in the between 2.1 million to 3 million to 1 million. Here's the issue that I have with all this, that where the NIL needs to be structured and needs to be fixed. Say you got a kid like Jaden Quaintance, freshman, one of the top players in the country. He's choosing between Arizona State, you know, Kentucky, and many others. Well, you've got a kid that's at Arizona State or wherever that kid is, and he's been there 2 to 3 years, 4 years.
And he makes $70,000.
And he makes $70,000, like you said, yes.
Yeah.
And and you're giving Jaden Hawkins $2.1 million, but you're not giving a kid that's gave all to the program the amount that Jaden Quaintance is given, then it becomes a locker room struggle.
Yep.
And that's why I think you see a lot of these kids, why a lot of them go into the portal, because the fact that they're not getting paid enough at their school that they gave their all for, they can find it somewhere else. And that's
inside of these deals, if you got contracts here, John, I mean, you could make these deals depending on, you could have levels. So you could sign for just a one-year deal on a lesser level, or you could sign on a higher deal on, let's say, a two-year deal or a three-year deal. And you have to stay for those 2 or 3 years
The thing. That's the whole thing that bothers me about the whole NIL transfer portal, is because, like I said, you get a kid like Jaden Quaintance, you get a kid like say you got a Caitlin Clark out there, right? A Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, somebody in the pro ranks that is a freshman coming into school. Well, you're going
to
give them
pro guys. It come to my mind. I mean, if you're good enough to turn pro, then I guess all of this would go out the window. But
yeah, it wouldn't
if
be.
You're staying in college.
But say you're a friend. Say you're a Reed Shepherd, and you're coming back to school for $3 million. Just an example. And another kid somewhere else has got basically nothing, like a $500,000 contract. But yet you're going to give a guy $3 million to play basketball. But you're not giving that kid another one. See, that's the part of the NIL that I'm kind of on the outs about, that needs to be structured. Because when you don't have that, that's where these guys jump. And they go to bigger opportunities to get – I'll give you an example. Lamont Butler. I love Lamont Butler. But the NIL with San Diego State wasn't as big as what Kentucky could give him. And that's a problem in college athletics. And I say that to say this, San Diego State needs to get with it too, and to get them involved in the community and some of these other schools, because some of these other schools that are not top heavy in the Power Five mid-majors, they're going to fall behind in the NIL if they don't get it fixed, because they're losing a lot of their players to these bigger
schools. So Jerry asked, would they prorate for smaller universities? My thought here is, Jerry, is that this would be a whole lot of this is probably talking about football. Because I think that's, you know, so my thought here is like D1 schools would probably be all tied together, and you might have different levels. You might have a level of a Group 5 school and a level of a Power Conference school, but I think it would be somewhere, you know, vaguely remote, close to each other. It's not going to be a huge, huge gap. You know, so you make everything a little bit closer together, where a school like San Diego State, John, can actually hold fort and compete.
Well, it's making it, and I'm not just saying San Diego State. I'm not talking about them. There's other schools in their area and region that are having the same issues that these other schools are not having. And the problem is a lot of these kids want the big buck. They want the big stage. They want to go to a bigger place to where they can showcase their talents. And when you don't have the NIL to match what these other schools are doing, it gives them an opportunity to be left in the dark. And I'm not just talking about San Diego State. I'm talking about a bunch of mid-major teams that have lost kids to these Power Five schools like Kansas.
In basketball, the Big East is a power conference, and they're getting kind of taken. I mean, players are going into the portal out of the Big East because they're getting offers from other places. So, I mean, it's not just a mid-major problem. So,
no, it's a whole basketball issue and football.
Yeah. Curtis, we do shows on Tuesday nights at 9 Eastern time, and that's our – set show. We do a Thursday or a Friday show at 9 Eastern time. And then sometimes we do a weekend wrap-up show on Sundays at 4 o'clock Eastern
time. But we will be taking a break in July, so everybody knows.
Yes. We're getting closer to the end of our season two, so we will be taking a little bit of more time off. So, but in when football and basketball is really going, we do 3 shows a week.
Yeah, and Brad gets annoying sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
But anyway, guys, I wanted to dig into this because I think there is some there is a time frame here. This case is actually going set to go to court January of 2025. So they are actively working to settle this thing. Mm-hmm. And they're working with this attorney that I talked about. His name is Jeffrey Kessler, and he is the one that helped structure the settlement in the 1993 Reggie White case that created salary caps and the free agency structure that we now know in the NFL.
Well, today it changed the whole landscape of the NFL. Like it literally just changed every single thing. And I think this could possibly be a big thing for college athletics.
I think it could be absolutely huge. And I'm kind of tired of the wild, wild west that's going on, to be honest with you.
Well, I will say this, that will be better starting next year. The COVID year is diminishing. So
I didn't even tell John that this was my next subject. I promise we did not have this set up. But actually, look at here. I was going to bring this up. After this coming year, there will be no more extra COVID year. Now, here's what I want to bring this up, but the basketball transfer portal right now, Division I, is approaching 2,000 players, okay? But nearly 500 of those players in the portal are in the portal using their extra COVID year. Mm-hmm. So about 25% be allowed to do that.
You froze up there for a second. What'd you say?
So I think you're going to see that the portal slows down because you won't have these players in there with an extra year. But not only that, here's another number. You're talking about these extra year players in the portal. 45 of the top 100 players, they're ranked, and everybody, Arkansas, Kentucky, and USC, and everybody's going after these players right now. 45 of the top 100 ranked players in the transfer portal are using their extra COVID year. So 45% of the top players won't be in there next year. That says a lot, John, doesn't it?
Does quite a bit. It changes. It's still going to be, you know, a little rough, but at least there'll be some knockouts to where some will be going pro and some will be doing other things.
I mean, if you lose 45% of your top players and 25% overall, that's going to eliminate – I think you're going to see a significant drop in the amount of entries into the transfer.
But if you've been there for 4 years, though, I think you can still get a fifth year.
I don't think.
Or you don't think
so? No.
I'm talking about if it's not. I'm not talking about if it's not COVID.
I'm saying if you played 4 years, no. If you redshirted or was hurt and set out, whatever, then yes, there'll be a few players that get to do that. But if you have physically played 4 years, you are out of eligibility. There's going to be no more of that extra year crap, which I am going to absolutely think is great because I am over
the transfer portal. But the transfer portal is still going to be a little wild, though. It's still going to be pretty top heavy, like it is. You're just not going to have that extra year.
It's going to be missing a lot. I'm telling you, there's almost 500 players out of the 2,000. Almost 25% are using that extra year. They won't have that extra year next year.
Well, I thought if it was just 4 years, you couldn't use that. You could use your fifth year, but I might be wrong on that.
No. So I'm not saying that with injuries, things that they won't be granted an extra year or sometimes two if they've had two injuries. I mean, I'm not saying that you won't see that some, but back 5, 6, 8 years ago, you only seen that every once in a while.
You didn't see it.
Because
you didn't see it a lot.
Right. And I'm not saying that you won't ever see it, but for 500 kids to get that extra year.
And another thing that people don't realize is, you know, I talked to a coach yesterday. Division II coach, and we were just talking about the portal and the NIL and whatnot, and he said that a lot of these kids that are in the portal right now, a lot of them ain't going to get picked up and go to a school.
They won't.
They're going to be sitting around waiting for a school to take them.
Yeah. Or a lot of them won't find, you know, somebody won't come along and pick them up.
No, and that's the bad part about this whole portal thing is, you know, some kids are going to be left without.
Unless they go back, unless they ask to go back to the school that they're transferring from.
The original school.
Possibly that they do that. Yeah, I mean, you could possibly do that. But, you know, all right, so let's get to – so college football – today is the last day for the 15-day period, spring period, for the transfer portal. So there's been quite a few people dropping names in today, getting their names in the football portal. But as of midnight tonight, there will be no more entering in the portal. Now, tomorrow we might hear a few names that dropped that got their paperwork in tonight. And, you know, we don't hear the names until tomorrow. But technically, if the paperwork and stuff, you have to be entered in tonight. And so there's quite a bit of stuff going on in the college football world, too. I know Texas, one or two people put their names in today.
There's a few Alabama guys that put theirs in.
Yeah.
Kentucky's put a few in. Arkansas's had quite a bit put themselves in.
Yeah, a running back from Arkansas put their name in today.
Might be a Johnson, maybe.
I can't think
of his last name, but it might have been a Johnson, I think. But there's been quite a bit. And I tell you, too, Kentucky ended up getting a good pick out of Michigan. Michigan had lost a few, and Kentucky got the Waller kid out of Michigan, which is most likely, if it all goes down to correction now.
He might be the starter.
He might be the starter. That's what I mean. He's a day one type guy. So a lot of transfer portal news. There's a lot of basketball, too, for portal. I think theirs ends tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the basketball portal ends tomorrow night at midnight. So there is one more full day of, and to be honest with you, there's been quite a few people dropping their names in today, and there'll be one more full day tomorrow. And like I said, as long as their paperwork is in by midnight, it might be the next day that we still hear some names.
I will say this. I will say this about the college basketball portal. John Fanton made a post about it tonight. He said he expects a flurry of transfer portal pick tomorrow. Now, it's going to be crazy.
It's already approaching 2,000.
But it's going to be wild tomorrow because it's the deadline. And there's going to be some that's going to just put their name out there. And like today, I'll give you an example. Coleman Hawkins from Illinois. He's a big one in the portal. You got Wooga Poplar.
He's also entered the draft.
Yeah.
And he put his name in the portal. He's really trying to get drafted.
Hawkins. Well, and then you got Wooga Poplar from Miami. There's about three Miami guys.
Put the name in the last like two or three days. Yeah.
And there's still a couple big time commitments still in the top 10 of the portal rankings that have not even committed yet. Great Osabor is not committed. Kobe Bray is not committed. Who else is in that list? Can't think. There's a few more other guys that are in that list that
Davis is not committed.
Yeah, and there's some that haven't even gotten on all their visits yet, and it's still a waiting process. I think you're going to see a lot of this is going to just kind of drag out until June in the NBA draft. It's going to be like this up until June. Now, I heard Mark Pope say, I think yesterday he said something, today maybe, that he was hoping to have his roster by May 15th and that he was going to leave a couple slots open.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be pushing it, really. But he is up to seven portal guys, so we do have a commitment to talk about this morning, and it wasn't really the commitment that everybody thought that it was going to be. So we have Great Osabar has been on a visit, and then last night Kobe Bray come in for a visit and arrived late last night, and everybody thought we were going to get up and hear maybe one of those names as a commitment this morning.
And guess what? Cody Fugger did another boom post.
He did.
You know, I'm going to say this real quick while we're on that. It's such a awesome thing to see this coaching staff connected with these fans. That's been missing a lot too. Seeing Coach Brooks, Coach Foger, and Coach Pope and everybody, you know, Hart, see them connect with the fan base, which that's a big thing. It connects everybody together, and I think it's been a good thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. So what we did this morning is everybody thought that we would probably hear one of those guys, Osabar or Bray, but we got a surprise, and there was a little bit of leakage last night that we might have a surprise commitment, and everybody was trying to guess, and nobody come up with Brandon Garrison's name, a 2023 McDonald's All-American that stayed at home, went to Oklahoma State, averaged 7.5, 5.3 rebounds as a freshman. He did have at least 20 plus point games. One of them was against BYU. One was against Baylor, which I thought was a little funny because you got Brooks at Baylor and you've got Pope at BYU, and they saw Brandon Garrison actually tear them up for 20 plus points up close and personal. And then he winds up at Kentucky here.
I think that had some to do with this. A part of it was, you know, they seen some tapes, they seen what he could bring to the table, and they
seen it in person in the game. Yeah. I mean, he scored 20 plus points against Baylor and BYU and West Virginia. There was three games I know, they were all in the Big 12. He had 21, 20, and 20 in those three games.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a McDonald's All-American. He was a top 40 guy, top 30 guy.
And
think
he picked it, he picked him over Arkansas too. Like everybody, Arkansas, and they're trying to play it off that Arkansas didn't want him, but that's, you know.
Well, as of last night, when I went to bed last night, the word was is it was probably down to Arkansas and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma was in there too, but everybody was saying it was probably going to be Arkansas or Texas.
And then about
he actually took three visits, and he went to Oklahoma, he went to Texas, and he went to Arkansas.
Yeah.
Guess who he didn't visit?
Us.
Yeah. He didn't even visit.
And here's the thing. And the smoke didn't happen till what? It was about 11 or 12. Because Trilly has said there was a lot of things going towards Kentucky's way with Brandon Garrison. And I thought maybe it was a like a ploy to get him to pick Arkansas and just put Kentucky on the list. But that was not the case. And I'll say this too. You know, with the whole Brandon Garrison thing, he doesn't even, you know, visit us. And Mark Pope comes up in the middle of the night like a thief in the night and takes him. You know, that's
so,
pretty impressive.
So Alvin Brooks heavily recruited him out of high school. So they did have a relationship. And like I just said, Pope and Brooks both seen him explode in games personally this past year for 20-plus points. So, you know, they know what kind of potential that Brandon Garrison has. He's 6'11". He's like 255, 260. You know, he had about 1.3, 1.5 blocks per game, and he only played like 22 minutes a game as a freshman. So, you know, he's got lots of potential. And I know I, for one, to say that Pope landed a McDonald's All-American already, I think that's pretty neat to be able to put that in your feather. Okay, you know,
that's a pretty impressive
feather in your cap. And I, you know, Mike, I do believe that there is possibly a long-term position here for Garrison. You know, I think with Carr and with Williams, you know, I can see they're both fifth-year seniors. Garrison has 3 years left. So technically he could be here three. I'm with you, Mike. I really think it's probably, if at best, we're probably looking at two with him probably. But he does have 3 years of eligibility. And Jerry and Mike, you guys are talking about Kobe Bray. Yes, a shooter like that, Jackson Robinson, he's in the draft. I don't know if he'll take his name out. I've seen some mock drafts. He's not in them. I have seen one that lists the players in best order, and he was 55. There's only 58 picks in the draft. I can't imagine that he would hope, if he does get his name out, that he will pick Kentucky and play for Mark Pope, his coach. He needs the exposure, and what better place to come to Kentucky to get that exposure? So he can make the NBA. That's what I say on that when it comes to that. Yes, Harrison can block shots. He's, like I said, I mean, he's got a lot of potential, I think. And I guess we lost John. I'm not sure what happened here. I got a message, though. Maybe that was John. Maybe not. There he is.
My thing just froze up and it let me, it clicked me out. I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay. Well, so on top of that, like I said, guys, we have had Asabar and Bree here with us today.
Return of the Mac.
They've been on a visit. So I will say this, Asabar, his family flew in from England and they have four visits set up: Kentucky, Louisville, Texas Tech, and Washington.
Washington, yeah.
All right. And I know people are going to think, Washington? Why Washington?
Because Danny Sprinkles went there.
His coach is there that he's been with the entire time. That's where Danny Sprinkle is.
And another.
And I know that people aren't going to give them enough credit, but he's going out there because of his coach that he's played for. That's going to be hard to pull him from, if you ask me. Unless you drop him $3 million like Louisville might.
Yeah. I will say this, another nugget before we end this show tonight. Elijah Hawkins committed to Texas Tech tonight. So that's another.
Yeah, he visited Texas Tech, posted a picture over the weekend on his Instagram and stuff. He visited Texas Tech over the weekend and committed to them today. You know, congratulations to him. The kid has been the Big Ten assist leader for three straight years. He had 7.5 assists a game. This past year, he averaged 9.5, but had 7.5 assists. True point guard. And he goes to Texas Tech and leaving Minnesota. So, but he was on Kentucky's radar. Of course, now he's not. I don't know. John, is there any other players right now? The one that I want to bring up is Poplar from Miami. So this evening, there's been talk that they're trying to set up a visit for him from Miami. He was part of that 2023 Final Four team. So that would be another guard with Final Four experience. Mm-hmm. And he shoots about 39% from three-point land, averaged almost 14 points a game, shooting guard, 6'5". He plays the two and the three he has at Miami. John, what do you think about him?
He's a good player. He didn't have the year that I thought he would have last year. There was just Miami just as a whole. There's a lot of injuries, a lot of things that happened with Miami. But he's a good wing guy, guard guy to have on your team. He can really shoot. And if people don't remember, he had, I think, 17, 18 points against Kentucky in their meeting where Miami got blown out by Kentucky at Rupp. So
he had 19, I think.
He had 19. So he's not accustomed to not having bad games. He's got a lot of good games in his arsenal. To be honest, if you lose a lot of these other options, he would not be a bad pickup to have and use because he would be another guard that you could use on the perimeter. But just as I was saying this, Kobe Brea has picked up another crystal ball, Duke guy crystal ball this afternoon. Now Chris Fisher has put one in for him as well. So that's two crystal balls Duke? In the UK. No, oh, for UK. UK. That's two
so it's
crystal
a Duke
balls.
Guy.
It's a Duke guy. He's crystal balled to UK. So, and now there's another one to UK. So,
okay.
I expect him.
You guys are talking about Asabar here. He has declared for the draft. He is in the draft.
Yeah.
He's another one that has declared.
Kobe Bray, he's now there's two crystal balls for him to go. I expect an announcement pretty soon. I'm thinking probably tomorrow, maybe.
Let's hope. We do need him. I want Bray Bria. I'm not sure how he pronounces his name. I think it's Bray, but I want him bad. He's a 50% 3-point shooter, and he shot 200, guys. 200, not 20. and shot 50%. 200. I mean, that's some shooting right there. I mean, Shepard shot like 155 and shot 52%, and he shot more than Shepard, 200. Mm-hmm. So, and hit 100. He's the only player in college basketball past second, third, and he had like 84, 85, mm-hmm. something like that. So, yeah, Duke quit recruiting him. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, but yeah.
I think it was mutual, maybe. I think they canceled the visit. Or...
All right, so real quick, point guard. I know that everybody's talking about point guard. Lamont Butler can play point guard. Let's just put it that way first, all right? But I think let's talk about Garrison's commitment this morning for just a minute. He played at Oklahoma State. He played with Javon Small. And Javon Small has been a name that we have heard for the last 2 weeks. He kind of had taken a back seat, it seems like, with Hawkins and with Mahaney and with a few of these other ones. Do you think landing Garrison could help with Javon Small?
I think it could. I mean, they're familiar with each other. They know, you know, they play a number of games with each other. You know, and the coaches know what they're doing. You know, I say this to say this, like, you know, everybody was worried that this player wasn't going to turn out the way it was supposed to be, but sometimes they know the plans that are supposed to happen. And I like the way that Pope is kind of going about this. He moves in silence. Like, there's not a lot of noise around Pope when it comes to insider information. Now, you might get a few guys hit like Jack Pilgrim and a few others that know more than me and you know, but I'm not an insider, don't want to be. I like doing what I'm doing. I don't want to be an insider because there's too much.
That was Devion Smith from Utah, Mike. That wasn't Javon Small.
You put yourself out there for criticism when you do insider information, you know, and you put yourself out there for anything, but you gotta know what you're talking about when that's going on. And I don't care to do that stuff. So keep me away from the insiders. I don't want to be an insider. I don't want to be an insider, that's for sure.
But that gives you kind of some names. If we could get Kobe Bray, whatever his name is, I've never actually heard anybody pronounce it, so I'm not sure how he pronounces it. But we would love to have him. He would be a great get. I hope we do land him. I know that everybody is waiting and looking for Osabar. I just want to warn you guys, I think it's going to be a little while because he has 3 other visits with family from England that flew in here. They set all this up so they could be here, and they put it out a week so they could come in. And the last visit is Washington with Danny Sprinkle, his old coach. So I'm not sure that I feel great, pun intended, about great. That's all I'm saying. The pun was intended there, guys. Bad joke. I'm sorry. My bad. All right, John, before we leave tonight, I want to ask you a question on the NFL draft. And you're probably not going to know the answer to this, but it's definitely been a long time. When is the last time the leading rusher of the SEC went undrafted in the NFL?
That's a good question.
Did you guys hear what I just said? The SEC leading rusher went undrafted in the NFL.
Cody Schrader.
From Missouri. I it blows my mind.
Yep.
It blows my mind that he went undrafted. And I tell you, somebody else that went undrafted, and it kind of blows my mind, because a couple of years ago, people were acting like he was going to be the next Joe Montana. And I know Joe Montana was a long time ago. You guys probably don't know who I'm talking about. But anyways, Sam Bradford from Wake Forest transferred to Notre Dame.
I mean Hartman, Sam Hartman.
Hartman, yes. Bradford was a long time ago. I'm sorry. That was,
by the way, a little tidbit. John L. Davis just committed to Arkansas.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. I think that's why we're going after Poplar.
Yeah.
Yeah. He secretly visited over the weekend to Arkansas, so I knew that was coming. I don't like it. I think we should have went after him. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think he would have came here if we would have really went after him with a bag. But it looks like the last week that Pope has turned the page on that. We really haven't pursued him for over a week. And it looks like he's after Mahaney and Bree and now Poplar and some other guys. Got Lamont Butler as a surprise in that time period as well, with Final Four experience as well, just like John L. Davis has and Poplar does too. So I'm not it's not like he's doing a bad job. He's doing a great job, but it looks like he turned the page on John L. Davis, possibly because I had heard he was looking for a bag. I had heard that, to be quite honest with you, I had heard that he was looking for $1.5 million, just to put it out there. I don't know if that's true or not. I have no idea. But that's what I had heard on John L. Davis. Leary got drafted, but Hartman did not. Bradford. Sam Bradford was Oklahoma quarterback, like, I don't know, 08 or something like that. It was a different time, but he was a quarterback, and he did get drafted. But anyways, Sam Hartman's who I was talking about. If you would have told me 2 years ago, Mike, that Hartman would not get drafted, but Leary would, I would have said, you're crazy. I just don't know how it's pronounced, Carter. Bria. I'm going to say Bria instead of Bree. I think it's Bria. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. All right, guys. We are going to call it a night. Thank you guys for being with us tonight. Look for some major changes happening in college sports, possibly football, but I think it's going to be major change overall. I think it's coming. So look for that to happen, and we will see you guys later in the week. I'm not sure if we'll do a Friday night or a Sunday show, but we'll do one of them. Bria, I got it, says Jerry Carter. All right, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Y'all have a good night.
Have a good one.